Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
My own personal opinion, I can say this. We know Danny loved his children passionately and would do anything for his kids. We know that. We know that when we spoke to him the day that he went missing, he was not unhappy. We know that. Danny is, we don't believe, is suicidal or was suicidal. We don't believe that for a second. And that's something we discounted right away in spite of the fact that everyone else seems to be on board with that. He was a confident man. Yes, he had some problems, but he was a very, very confident man. And he knew. And he knew the people he loved, and he knew people loved him. So we don't know.
On November 25th, 2019, 29-year-old Daniel Ryok was in the custody of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police in Squamish, British Columbia, for the majority of the day after they picked him up walking along a rural road, in temperatures just barely above freezing. He wasn't dressed for the weather. He didn't have a jacket on, only a t-shirt. Daniel called his uncle, but something didn't seem right. His demeanor was off. He was in the midst of a crisis. And the police, as well as Daniel's family, were concerned. But they couldn't hold him. And that evening, he was released from custody. 12 hours later, he'd vanish into the dark of night, walking off into the darkness of another road in a rural part of the Squamish Valley, never to be seen again. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 352 of The Vanished, Daniel Ryok's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. While traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Daniel Ryok had not gotten an easy start to life. When Daniel was just 10 years old, his mother April was tragically murdered on Christmas Day, in a heinous crime with little motive. But even before that, Daniel's life had been choppy. He was often between relatives' houses, seeing and living with his mom intermittently, and without any idea of who or where his father was. We spoke to several family members for Daniel's story, and started with his cousin Sonia, who he considered a sibling, and they referred to each other as brother and sister. Sonia told us what the early history of Daniel's life was like.
So my dad's brother, Bill, he's from Ontario. He came out here and he met Daniel's grandmother, Kathy, and they had a daughter together, April. And so April is actually my first cousin. Danny's mom is my first cousin. She got pregnant with Danny at 14, gave birth to him back in Ontario where her dad is, where my uncle is, and then came back to BC with him. And she ended up on the east side of Vancouver, which is pretty much Skid Row. She ended up into the drugs. And then Danny was raised by family members from his indigenous side, from the Squamish Nation. April ended up back on the east side. And then we met Danny a few times throughout, you know, the first 8-9 years of his life, but not too often because he was usually with the other side of the family, and April was on the east side. And then April ended up getting murdered. She was trying to sort of make her life better. She was trying to get off Skid Row, and unfortunately, she was murdered and put in a dumpster. And after she was found, there were a number of funerals. There was a funeral downtown Vancouver. There was a funeral with the Squamish Nation as well. And then Danny at the time was in foster care, and we started having him over for visits. Like, as soon as that happened, we started having him over for visits. He was 10 at the time. And then the visits turned into sort of week-long stays. And then eventually my parents ended up taking him in to raise as their own that same year. So he was 10. So he basically was raised by my parents from the age of 10 until he graduated high school. He was very intelligent, really, really smart. He went through a lot in his early childhood. And of course, losing your mom, and he didn't know who his dad was at the time. He handled it really well when he was younger. He was very musical as well. My dad's best friend ended up making him a guitar. And he started guitar lessons, and he was extremely talented with the guitar. So very musical, very intelligent.
April was only a teen herself when she gave birth to Daniel. And though we don't know much of her own history, we do know that she ended up dependent on drugs and without a stable place to live. April's uncle Rob and his wife ended up taking Daniel in, at first just temporarily, but he quickly became part of their nuclear family.
My brother was Danny's grandfather. April, who is Danny's mother, was my niece. The loss of his mother, she had, she had her devils that she was dealing with. It made it difficult for him in that regard. He was staying with an aunt. He was sort of staying with other people on the other side of the family. A lot of times they weren't the best situations. His biological father was never on the scene at all. He was the only time he came back into his life was when Danny was an adult. But he had absolutely no contact, and he didn't even, I don't even think we even knew his name until later on. His mom, she was murdered. He came back into our lives in there on that period because we were, of course, it was a family thing. And we could see that he was in foster care at the moment. He was living with an aunt, and I think he was removed from her. And he was then in foster care. We started having him over to the house a lot more. As time went on, he just seemed to fit like hand in glove with the other siblings that are here, the other kids that we have here. And he just became part of our family, and it was a very natural, organic thing. It was very, very easy. And so we thought that, well, you're just going to stay here. So we went through the system, and he was never in foster care when he was here. He was just, well, he was family. So we took him on as a family member. So that's essentially how he came to us. And as time goes on, he became more and more comfortable, and he was just one of the kids here. But because he was a family member with us, it made it a little bit more streamlined getting him to stay here. He was so darn happy, so darn happy. Danny, when he was with us, had a very, very normal life, and he was never treated as an outsider. He was our fourth child. It's plain and simple. He's our fourth child, and he was well loved here. He was always our son. And he knew that, and he appreciated that. And he has said it often that I said, you're my mom and dad. We would say, yes, you are. You are our son. We wanted to support him throughout his life so that he could reach achieve his potential, because he had so much potential because he was so bright. We wanted him to educate himself, to be educated. We wanted him to have a good future. When his mom passed away, we realized that we couldn't, there's nothing we could have done to help her. And when Danny came into our lives, we said, well, you know, we can help this little fella. We can honor April by helping him as well. He came into a house with three children. So he had siblings in this house, so to speak. He was quite a musician. He was a big time football player. And skateboarding, we had him in music lessons. In the beginning, we had him on piano lessons. And then that moved on to guitar, because guitar was his first love, ultimately. And he was very, 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 very accomplished at that.
Sonia remembers April's horrific death and the aftermath, when Daniel's future living situation suddenly became even more uncertain.
It was awful. And we hadn't spent much time with him in the sort of the couple of years preceding that. The last time I remember seeing her, she had showed up at the house with Danny, and Danny was like maybe 7. And she just sort of showed up in the, you know, at night, and she was kind of all over the place, but she was really excited to see my dad. And like, she called my dad Uncle Spud. That was his nickname. But I remember my mom kind of like holding us back a little bit because they knew that she was likely under the influence. But Danny was there and he was really excited to, you know, see us. And I remember him being like, oh, he's so cute and I hope he's okay and blah, 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 blah. I knew of him quite well and I had seen him before, but it wasn't until she died that then my parents were like, okay, she had the funeral. They noticed that he wasn't there and they were like, where's Danny? And they were like, oh, he's at the foster families. And my dad was like, oh, he's with foster family now. Okay. So they ended up, my dad went to the foster house and picked him up and brought him to the funeral. And that was kind of like our first like real introduction to him at that time. And I just remember him walking in and looking really stunned and like really kind of lost. And then my mom was like, okay, we're going to start having him over. We're going to have him over for visits. And so she got permission to do that. And then he started coming over for visits on weekends. And then she'd pick him up from school. And then he'd walk with my brothers home from school. And then it sort of just turned into then him, her being like, okay, we're going to take him in. And he is going to be, we're going to raise him as ours so that he doesn't end up back in foster care again. Like the foster family that he was with at the time was great. They were amazing people. But I mean, you know, you don't stay with the same foster family for that long and you bounce. And there are good foster families and there's not so good foster families. And my parents were just like, we just want him to be with family where he doesn't have to feel like, okay, I'm going to be moving again or I'm going to be going to another foster family or whatever. Like, we just want him to be with family. And then they became his legal guardians.
Daniel was surrounded by so much love, a strong support system, and positive role models. But Sonia told us that as Daniel came into adolescence, he began to struggle with some of the negative aspects of his life that started before his birth and could be attributed to nature or nurture.
As he got older, he got a bit more oppositional, was struggling a lot with his lot in life a bit. And so he, you know, drank quite a bit and the cops ended up bringing him back home several times throughout his teen years. And my parents always took him back in, of course, and they had a pretty good relationship with the cop because it was usually the same cop that would bring him, pick him up and bring him home. And so a few times they brought him home and my parents kept him. And there were a few times when he ended up staying in the drunk tank basically for the night and then calling my parents in the morning and saying, you can come pick him up now. But he was really, really kind and he was really giving and really thankful to my parents. And like he called my parents auntie and uncle in a form of affection. And then he was my cousin, but we referred to each other as like brother and sister. And I also have two younger brothers as well. And they were very, very close with him, especially the youngest one, because they were closer in age. So it's been really hard on him, especially my youngest brother. But he was our family. He was my brother. And then when a couple of years after graduating high school, like my mom was determined to get him through to high school and we managed to do that. He graduated. He started working as a laborer here and there. And then he had sort of we didn't know at the time if he was getting into the drugs or what was going on, but he kind of had a little bit of a mental break and he took the bus. He decided to leave his place in Squamish. He was renting a basement suite in Squamish and he jumped on a Greyhound bus and took off because he said there were people after him. He ended up getting kicked off the bus in Manitoba because the bus driver, he was just a little bit off and the bus driver was like, okay, you have to get out. We can't go any further. So he got off the bus and he ran into the woods and he ended up found a cabin. He broke in and then I think he turned himself into the police or the police found him or something. I'm not sure, but I think he turned himself in. And so he was brought to the jail in Winnipeg. His grandpa, my uncle from Thunder Bay, Ontario, flew out, picked him up and then brought him back to Thunder Bay where he lived for a couple of years, actually several years, about 3 years, where he sort of seemed to be getting his life back on track a little bit. And then he ended up coming back to BC.
Rob explained that the family wasn't entirely sure what drugs, if any, Daniel was using besides drinking alcohol, but that some of the behaviors he exhibited resembled the effects of other substances.
He started using substances I guess, in his late teens. He started experimenting with that sort of thing. Alcohol, that was his drug of choice for the most part. He had a very, very good life here, very, very happy life here. He did have that baggage. He was still wearing a lot of that stuff. He did use other substances. He used marijuana. Later on in life, he was using, we think it was meth, but we're not quite sure what that drug was. But yeah, he was onto other things as well. And like he became very paranoid, and that's led us to believe that it may have been meth that he was using, because apparently that's one of the things that manifests using meth, is the paranoia. It's a real robber of dreams. You know, when you get involved with that sort of, those sorts of drugs. And the thing about Danny was, like, he was so bright. He was above average in intelligence when he was in school. He was a gifted musician. He essentially had everything going for him. And any sort of education post high school that he wanted to pursue, we were encouraging him to go and involve himself with. So yes, well, like when he was using these substances, that robbed him of all that, became paranoid, and you know it was very sad to see, because he was not the Danny that we knew and love in many ways. And it was an on and off thing with him. It wasn't always that way. It wasn't always that person who was on drugs. When he graduated from high school, when things were fine in his life, I mean, he had two children. He worked steady. He was a good provider for his children. And was I think at that time, and he may have had he would enjoy beer too, but he was not, definitely not taking anything like meth. He certainly was not doing that, but he... You know, that's why we're saying it was an off and on sort of thing. When he first graduated from high school, I know he had some experiences with that, and they weren't great.
During these times, Daniel's Uncle Rob and the rest of Daniel's family spent a lot of time worrying and wondering if Daniel was okay. And then it seemed as though he'd made a turn for the positive. He met a woman in the Squamish Indigenous Nation he was from, and they had two children together. Sonia told us more.
He met his girlfriend at the time, Kilayla, and they ended up having two children together, which both of them loved dearly, and he loved his children dearly. He would do anything for those kids. And we saw him quite a bit. Like, we'd see him for dinners often. He would bring Key over with the kids, and we would have family dinners, and they would sometimes come over for Christmas dinner, and it just seemed like he was getting his life together. And my parents were really supportive of it. We were all very supportive of him in doing that. And we thought, well, maybe him having kids has really turned his life around, which it did seem to. He was really happy with them and all that. And he got back into his guitar playing again, and he'd perform at events for the nation, for the Squamish Nation. And yeah, so he kind of lived, he lived mostly on the res with his girlfriend at the time, but he also came back and forth, and he would call my dad if he needed something or he needed a ride somewhere or something like that. He would come over often if he was just kind of in the area.
Daniel appeared to be doing well and clearly loved his two children. His family had high hopes that the challenges he faced as a teenager had been a passing phase, and that fatherhood had given Daniel a new meaning in life. But Daniel had fallen back into old habits, and the relationship with the mother of his children didn't last, and before anyone could intervene, he vanished. Sonia told us about the difficult last memory she has of her conversation with Daniel.
I mean, before that, we had had a disagreement. I forgave him of that, and when we chatted, and like the last text that I did say to him, which I'm happy about, was that I loved him. And he said the same thing too. Like, he said, I love you too. And so I still have that. But then this was a little bit later on when he was trying to contact me again and reaching out, and I was ignoring him because I just couldn't do it myself. Like, emotionally, I just couldn't handle it. And I knew he needed help. And unfortunately, I guess I was being kind of selfish, and I just was ignoring his texts. And then in late November, so he wasn't coming around because of what had happened, but we knew he was around because he would still call and check in and that kind of thing.
It was during this time in Daniel's life that he was couch surfing and didn't have a steady place that he was living at all the time. But Daniel kept in contact with his family. They may not have known where he was staying on any given day, but they knew that they would hear from him every few days. They hoped that Daniel was working on turning things around in order to get his life back on track again. But then the family began to notice that more time than usual had gone by without any word from Daniel.
We sort of stopped hearing from him early December. We noticed that he wasn't calling or anything like that. And then my Uncle Bill, his grandpa, ended up passing away suddenly, December 10th, I think it was. And my dad had to fly back to Ontario. We were also dealing with the loss of my grandma at the time as well, who Danny loved, and she loved Danny. So I think that was also part of why it was so hard for us to deal with his behavior at the time, because she had died only a couple of months before he vanished. And my dad went back to Ontario to deal with his brother and his house and that kind of thing. And it was kind of messy. That whole thing was a bit messy because he didn't have a will or anything like that. But he went back and he was dealing with it. And then my dad, when he returned, he thought like, okay, because when he was in Ontario, he was trying to get a hold of Danny because we were trying to tell him like, your grandpa died. But we couldn't find him. His phone wasn't working. He started calling around to different relatives within the Squamish Nation. And everyone was like, no, haven't heard from him. His ex-girl, because it was his ex then, they weren't together anymore. And she had custody of the kids. She was like, no, I haven't seen him either. Like, nobody had seen him. And so my dad, anyways, was like, okay, well, you know, I'll wait until I get back. So he returned from Ontario in just before Christmas. And he ended up calling his probation officer, because he had to check in with a probation officer every so often. Danny did. He was like, well, I can't give you that information if he was checked in or not. My dad was like, well, I just want to know if he's around. Like, nobody's heard from him. I haven't heard from him. It's just really strange. And the probation officer just was like, no, I can't tell you. And so then my dad contacted Christine Baker, who worked out of the office at Totem Hall, which is like the sort of the main offices for the Squamish Nation. And she was like, oh, I don't know if I've seen him, but somebody said that she saw him come in to pick up his check because they get checks to the nation. He was like, okay, well, that's great. So someone's seen him. So he kept trying to figure out who had seen him and where he had seen him. But then eventually, like, my dad was getting nowhere with any of this. And then he found out that he really hadn't picked up his check. So we're assuming that it was someone that looked like him that picked it up. And so someone just thought, okay, oh, that must have been him that I saw the other day. You know, it looked like him. But he didn't pick up his check. So he had done that. So finally, after Christmas passed, my dad was like, okay, this is weird. Like, he always reaches out at Christmas. We always see him at Christmas. He always stops by with the kids. And we heard nothing from him. So my dad ended up calling the RCMP or calling Christine Baker first and was like, hey, I'm going to go report him missing. Is that okay? And she was like, yeah, absolutely. Go do that. So, you know, there's a lot of people who were like, okay, this is getting concerning.
Rob explained that he was hoping to hear that Daniel's probation officer had seen him during the holidays or that he had checked in before they chose to file a missing persons report.
We spoke to the probation officer. Once he came back from the holidays, we got things on the go again. That was on January 7th. He said that no, he had not checked in with the parole officer, fifth check in every so often, and he hadn't done that. So they were concerned, and they were gonna try to find him because he was in breach of his probation. So he missed his check in mid-November. He missed his December check. Probation officer hadn't seen him, so red flags were popping up with us. So I phoned the RCMP and filed a missing persons report for Danny.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online.
Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished.
Going over Daniel's disappearance with his family, it seemed like there was a lot of lost time early on. Daniel's family had spoken to him in late November, and something seemed off. But then they spent the next several weeks trying to track him down. They got some false leads at first, but everything seemed to point back to the end of November, being the last time that anyone saw Daniel. So they tried to focus in on that last day. We knew that Sonia had worked with her family to create a timeline of events, so we asked her to break it down for us, so that we could understand exactly what happened to Daniel, in a time that he seemed to be struggling with some kind of mental health event.
I'll go back to the morning of the 25th, because that was the last day that my dad talked to him. Once we've, like, you know, worked out our timeline and stuff, this is what we, you know, because they figured out that he was last seen on November 26th, the morning of November 26th. That was the last time he was seen. Chikai Ranch, which is like a horse ranch up in Upper Squamish, which is just sort of like a more rural part of the town. And it's close to the reservation where he was staying at the time. Chikai Ranch called on the morning of the 25th. And he said, hey, like, there's this guy, he's been wandering around on the road with his t-shirt over his head. And I approached him and I said, are you okay? What's going on? He gave me this number and said to call you. He wants to talk to you. And my dad was like, that's fine. I'll talk. Let's talk to him. And so Danny takes the phone and he's like, hey, uncle, how are you doing? And he started laughing. And my dad was like, what's going on? Like, are you okay? He was like, oh, I'm living in another timeline right now, is what he said. My dad was like, okay. And then he started laughing again. He was like, yeah, I love you. I love you, Unc. And then he could hear the man in the background saying, oh, I need my phone back. So the ranch owner took the phone back and then was like, okay, the RCMP are here. And my dad was like, yeah, just let him take him and we'll figure out what's going on after. And then he was taken into custody and then he was released at 5 o'clock that evening. And then he was seen at a nearby Tim Hortons coffee shop at 6. Then he was seen on surveillance at Walmart at 6:45. Then he was seen after 7 o'clock again on surveillance at the Tim Hortons again. And then he got a ride to Chequemus, which is where he disappeared. And then the time in between that and 1 o'clock, we know that he disappeared.
No one knew that Daniel was actually missing. But shortly after this time, Daniel's grandfather passed away. The family knew that Daniel would be devastated by his grandfather's passing and wouldn't miss his funeral. And that ended up being the biggest clue that Daniel hadn't just gone off the grid. He was in trouble. Here's Rob.
Where he was when he went missing, we last knew he was on the reservation. Unfortunately, his grandfather had passed away in December. Danny went missing in, I think it was 25th of November, the last time we talked with him, and that was the day. After that, he went missing. But his grandfather had passed away in early December, and we were trying to get a hold of him because it was his grandpa, and we wanted him to know what was going on. And you know, perhaps bring him back to Thunder Bay for a funeral. And we couldn't get through to him by any means. He had a parole officer, and we tried going through the parole officer to see if we could locate him, and we couldn't. Ultimately, the parole officer that he had, we had a good relationship with, because we were concerned about Danny. His parole officer at that time, it was in or on Christmas, and he was taking a few weeks off at Christmas time. The parole officer, as a source of information for finding out how Danny's doing and where he was gone. He had a stand-in or a replacement working in the office, but he was not forthcoming with any information at all. He was absolutely no help to us at all in trying to locate Danny because of he perceived it as a confidentiality thing. So we had a space in time where we couldn't contact Danny. And we tried to get him, the parole officer, we need him to know that his grandpa died. That was a dead-end road.
Earlier, Sonia told us about how Daniel was due to pick up a check from the Squamish Nation, and his family had been told that he picked it up, leading them to believe that Daniel was alive and well. Rob explained that this case of mistaken identity tripped them up early on.
We did get a hold of Totem Hall, which is the Squamish Native. It's a big hall, and they also have their administration offices there. And we were speaking with someone there that we were saying that we're looking for Danny. We've got family information that we need to share with him. We were going to have a great amount of difficulty trying to find him. They said that because they receive checks, they get money, they get a check at Christmas time. We were told that somebody had seen Danny walking in to pick up his check. So we thought, okay, well, he's fine. He's around somewhere. He's still in the community. But as it turns out, it wasn't him at all. It was mistaken identity. It was Kilela, who's Danny's ex. Her new partner physically resembled Danny quite a lot. And I guess when somebody saw Kilela coming in and this gentleman coming in with her, they assumed it was Danny, and it wasn't. They were there picking up their Christmas bonus as well. So in fact, Danny hadn't been seen since November 25th. We received two phone calls from him the last day he was seen alive. I talked to him in the morning, and then he called again around 5 o'clock, around supper time. He was not unhappy, just wanted to talk. He was actually in good spirits both times when I talked to him. This is why this is such a mystery, that presumably that evening was the evening that he disappeared.
We want to emphasize that it wasn't that no one was looking for Daniel. It was almost as though everyone simply believed that he would show back up, just as he had done before, and his mother had done before him. But he didn't come around, and that was when his family started to look back at the changes in his behavior prior to his disappearance.
He sort of went through a weird period again where he had broke his hand, and my dad was going to bring him down. He was going to bring him down to North Vancouver for an operation on his hand, and he ended up going in the hospital, but then he didn't. He called my dad back shortly after and said, oh, I'm not having the surgery or something like that. And my dad picked him up and said, what's going on? He goes, oh, I'm not having the surgery or something like that. My dad was really confused by it. And then he just started going through a really weird period where he wasn't trusting people, or he wasn't, you know, he was suspecting that people were after him, that kind of thing. But he still, you know, was pretty happy. Like, he was a pretty happy guy. He just, something was going on. He ended up back in my parents' neighborhood, and my dad, like, heard some loud banging. There was some loud banging going on, and he went out to the kitchen and noticed that Danny had kicked the door open, the back door open of the kitchen. He was going, like, what's going on? And Danny was really confused. I guess he had just kind of, I don't know, had some sort of break, or was on my dad. We were starting to suspect that he was on meth, but we weren't totally sure because of the paranoia and the behavior. And he had broken into the next door neighbor's house as well, too. He had broken in and was trying to find, I think, because his old best friend used to live next door. So it was, I think he was stuck maybe in the past or something like that. Like, he was thinking he was going to find his friend, and then he was going to, you know, he wasn't sure why my dad wasn't answering the door. I don't know exactly. But my dad ended up having to call the police and say, like, this has happened and I don't know what's going on. And he just seems really out of it. So the police took him. then he was released later on. And Danny ended up, this is something I regret. Like, I regret this for, will always for regret this, but, and it's the first time that I'm admitting it as well, really. But he was texting me again and again and again, because he knew what he had done and I wasn't happy about it. And there were some other things that had happened that I was just like, okay, I can't talk to him right now. I can't do it. You know, I need some time. And so he was texting me and saying, you know, trying to get me talking and saying like, hi, yeah, I know what I did was really crappy and all this kind of stuff. And I was ignoring him and then he vanished.
Back when these events occurred, Daniel's family was frustrated and believed he was possibly using a substance that was causing these behaviors. But looking back now, after he's been missing for nearly 3 years, they can't help but wonder if Daniel was having a mental health crisis and needed help. Whenever there's a delay in reporting someone missing, it always makes things more difficult. Earlier, Sonia went over the timeline of Daniel's movements on November 25th. He had been picked up by the RCMP after he was reportedly acting strange. They later let him go. He was seen on surveillance at a Tim Hortons, a Walmart, and then Tim Hortons again. Then, Daniel got a ride up to the area where he ultimately disappeared, and we don't know exactly who gave him a ride. Sonia explained that they've spent so much time trying to trace the last sighting of Daniel, and the last known person they've been able to track down is one of Daniel's aunts, who says that she saw him around 1 a.m. on November 26th, 2019.
I know that his Aunt Katrina was one of the last people to see him. And she said that because she's the one that was on the back deck when he decided to run off behind the house through the trail to Lewis Drive. And she was there with her husband, and her husband was saying, like, put on a jacket. It's freezing cold, because it was a really cold evening. Like, put on a jacket. What are you doing? And she said to me, she's like, I wish I would have tried to keep him there. But he was totally out of it. He was saying, he was calling her dog his girlfriend's dog, and that he was getting married and all this stuff, like just total like nonsense, kind of like what he was saying to my dad earlier that day, like how he's living on a different timeline. So he was definitely under the influence of something. And I think, so I'm going to say it was Katrina that saw him last. I'm not 100% sure, but that was the last reported sighting of him officially as well. So
no one has a clear explanation for why Daniel was behaving erratically that day. Was it drugs? Was it a mental break? We don't know the answers to these questions, but we do know that this is where Daniel's footsteps end. His aunt saw him run off of her porch in the early morning hours of the 26th into the darkness, and no one has reported seeing him after that time. Despite the fact that Daniel had been seen on foot most of the day, he did have a car. There has been some confusion over the car and where exactly it was found.
So there's like a road bridge that goes over the river. And so at first we heard that his car was abandoned there, that the door open, it was found at 2 a.m. or something like that. And his phone was left in there. But then now I'm hearing that it was actually left in a relative's driveway, and then they got it towed like the next day or that morning or something like that after he vanished. They called the tow company, and the tow company came and took his car. But I still hear that his phone was in it. So, and that the cops have it. I heard it was on the bridge, but now I'm hearing from other people that it was actually in the driveway of that house on Squamish Valley Road. So I don't know. If you go over the bridge heading north, Squamish Valley Road, it's like two houses in, I think. It was where he was staying at the time. He was house hopping a lot at that time. He had all his stuff at that house. It's like his guitar, that kind of thing. So that's probably why it was there. But with like the door open and his phone in it, he left it. In some stories I hear it was running, and in some stories I hear it wasn't. So I don't know 100% about that one.
The situation with Daniel's car has been confusing. They've been told different locations. But Rob also struggles to understand why someone called to have the car towed so quickly. But no one sounded the alarm that Daniel was missing.
And there's some things that are very questionable about that as well. His car was found on the road, and I believe some of his possessions were in the car as well. And this is again in the res. And the next day, someone had his car towed away. Why would you tow his car away? So just some individual decided, well, let's move the car. because the reservation is not, you know, it's very spread out. It's wooded. It's, you know, they're on a very nice piece of land, but it's not very crowded.
Along with looking for Daniel, his family has also been searching for answers as to why this all happened. Rob told us that he struggled to understand how Daniel went from doing so well to slipping back into dangerous behaviors that had plagued him in the past.
When he was with Kilela, he became just a working dad, and he might have had a couple of beers from time to time, but that was it. And he was just a very, very happy father. And then that, I guess, the relationship was maybe deteriorated, and he was on his own and into that world again. And I think that's where he was when he went missing. He was on the reservation up in Chikai, living. I think he had a number of places that he was staying, but we're not sure of those locations, because I think he was maybe doing a little bit of couch surfing. He was with one friend, then onto the next friend sort of thing. That's the way his life was at that time. And the up in Chikai, the reservation, it's not a large community. It's actually quite small. But he always stayed in touch with us. He always called. He always checked in. He was very good that way. He would always make sure all the mothers there, Father's Day, or birthdays, he would always phone. He would do that. He was very thoughtful in that regard, even when he was not at his best. But I guess something else had a bit of a grip on him. And I guess the chips were down as far as his life was going. You know, I guess maybe it was a hard hole to dig himself out of.
Though Canadian law enforcement traditionally has not granted us interviews, and didn't in this case either, we know that they have been involved from the beginning based on what Daniel's family told us. Rob shared that he's been grateful for their help and resources.
We had the police involved. They did what the police do. They went around and knocked on a few doors in the reservation, and they wanted lists of friends that we knew Danny had. I guess they went and spoke to a few people. That way, we were just turning up nothing at all. It was some searches organized and on the reservation. And of course, this is 6 weeks later, by the way, after he was last seen. So there was a search, and of course, there was nothing turned up. We were in winter, and there was snow on the ground. But anyway, yeah, nothing was found. So there was a space between the last time my wife, Deb, and I talked to him on November 25th and January 7th when I placed got the missing persons report going. That's about 6 weeks. Apparently, no one knew anything. And that was a little bit disconcerting to us because nobody noticed that he was missing, even though he was living in a very, very small community. We've got a lot of questions about that, to which there doesn't seem to be any logical answers. But I think it was a little bit quiet on that front. As soon as we made the RCMP missing persons report, now everybody was now trying to be helpful. But by now, this is 6 weeks had passed. So we don't know what happened to Danny. There is a presumption in some areas that he went to the river and drowned himself. There's a major river that runs right through the Chikai Reserve. And that was a presumption that he had drowned himself. And then that gave some people some peace of mind, thinking that's what happened to him, because we now have an answer, but we don't know, because he was never found. It is a very, very active river, busy, busy river, quite fast moving. Well, the river slows down when it meets the ocean, and that's not terribly far away. But again, you know, as far as that goes, you know, like that's really not our line of expertise about, you know, how things in the river wash up or don't wash up. We really don't know about that. That stuff, we just don't know enough about that. But one thing we do know is the search on the shorelines and on the river turned up nothing. But again, this is 6 weeks later. If someone had noticed that he was missing, you'd think the alarms would have gone up a lot earlier than that. But it took us, with the passing of his grandfather and us needing to get a hold of him, that led us to filing the missing persons report and getting the ball rolling. But prior to that, absolutely nothing was done by anyone. Not a thing, not a word.
Rob has gotten the impression that the RCMP believes that Daniel took his own life back on that chilly November night in 2019. But he doesn't know what to think since Daniel has never been found.
As far as we could gather, they were perhaps going with the theory that Diane was in the river and you committed suicide. That I think that was a prevailing attitude. But we don't know, because we have no information at all. There's been a bit of a vacuum of information since that time. We don't know, unless they know something that they're sitting on right now. Searches, they were on the river as well as on the banks of the river trying to find anything. There was a search on the grounds of the Chikai Reserve. I think that was more of a community thing than it was a police thing. I think it was the police were involved, but it was more the community. That seems to be it. I mean, there's still fading posters around town with Danny's face on it. We have received no new information at all. And that's where we're at right now. It's absolute inertia.
While things seem to have slowed down, Sonia told us that she believes that is in part due to the weather and the COVID-19 pandemic.
So after he went missing, the police did an official search. They did an official search of the river. At first, it was a little bit confusing as to where his car was found, because his car was found abandoned. But I had heard two versions of the story. So I'd heard that it was found on the bridge that kind of connects the Upper Squamish to Squamish. Yeah, they did a search with a helicopter and boats and stuff like that. And they followed the river and went down to the ocean. That's what we were told anyway. And then we did a search ourselves in late January, I think, where we all sort of met up. Like, they had someone from Search and Rescue come and sort of lead it so that we knew what we were doing. The chief for the Squamish Nation, he was there, and he kind of led us in a sort of a explanation as to where people were going to go, how it was going to happen. And we met at that address where his car was last seen. There was a lot of snow at the time. We were broken up into groups and we just sort of spread out and we were given different routes to take. And so I was with a few people from his family, plus a friend of mine came along, and we just basically searched. We were told to follow the path that he was last seen, because he was last seen at 1 o'clock in the morning on the 26th of November. He had left the house where he was and just walked off into the woods to the street next to it, which is Lewis Drive. Like, I was talking to April's sister, and she was saying that she was there that night, and she was telling him, put on a jacket, you're going to freeze. And he just ignored her and walked off. So we sort of followed those paths, like any path that he could have taken. But it was really hard because there was a lot of snow, and to the point where we needed snowshoes. But we searched for several hours and came back, checked in with the sort of the guy who was leading it, the RCMP liaison, sort of like an RCMP liaison between the Squamish Nation and the RCMP. They've searched the river banks. I think they use dogs. They use boats. They had a hard time because I think the river levels were, I think there was a lot of ice at the time when they were looking. There was something that was sort of impeding their search, so they couldn't get too close to like the shoreline or something. But they took a helicopter and a boat, and they went from the spot where they think he would have gone in and went all the way down, all the way to the sound, sort of by Britannia Beach. Like, if you look at on the map, the river kind of leads out into like the sound by Squamish, and then it opens up, and then there's Britannia Beach, which is used to be an old copper mine, and it's now a mining museum and a neighborhood. And so they kind of went out that far, and as far as I know, that's what they've done for that. They've done physical searches as well. Like, they've searched the woods around the area where he disappeared. That's about as far as I know. So that was the problem with COVID, for sure, is that when that hit, like, everything stopped, and then the focus just turned completely onto COVID.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
After the big search, Daniel's loved ones gathered with other members of the Squamish Nation, as well as RCMP officers, and the Vancouver police officers that worked with Daniel's mother, April, nearly two decades earlier, that call themselves the Odd Squad.
The RCMP liaison guy was there, just kind of hanging out at like the food area. We did a what they call like a circle talk where you sort of meet. We went to Totem Hall, which is like their main hall. And we sat in a big giant circle and we passed around a talking stick and we were all able to sort of share our thoughts and feelings about what was happening and what had happened, you know, sort of like where we are, where we were mentally with it all, introducing ourselves, that kind of thing. So there was quite a few people there, including my side of the family as well, like my parents and my brother. Both my brothers were there. The RCMP officer was there, and then there was someone from victim services there as well. And then after that, we participated in a sweeping ceremony where basically, you have two elders from the nation and they have eagle feathers and incense and they sweep you of all of sort of the negative energy that you have. Super powerful. So that happened and that sort of gave me a lot of hope. Like there's a lot of people out here who love him and want to find him and want to know what happened. You know, some of the people in the circle shared, you know, sort of their last memories of him from that night because a lot of people did see him that night. And then we had a candlelight vigil a couple of weeks later, where people from the community could come, just like Squamish itself could come. It was downtown Squamish, and we had candles, and members of the Odd Squad showed up, and the Odd Squad were, they're kind of like the Vancouver police.
While we were producing this episode, we learned that Daniel's mother, April, had been documented by Vancouver police in a film that was made by police officers who dubbed themselves the Odd Squad, and decided to carry cameras with them to capture the real-life struggles of those in particular areas of Vancouver, where drug users frequented. The film they created, Through the Blue Lens, was used in schools across Canada to teach students about the harsh realities of addiction. Sonia told us about the Odd Squad.
We did the candlelight vigil. The Odd Squad was there. The Vancouver police, when April ended up on the east side, she was really young. And they were like, what are you doing down here? You're way too young. And she was like, oh, no, I'm just visiting. And then she ended up addicted to drugs. But they loved her because she was so kind-hearted. And she just would do anything for anybody. And so they ended up filming her.
The police had good intentions. We watched the film and they were kind, compassionate, and had what we identified as two primary goals. Help those they encountered get out of their situation and into a substance-free environment, and prevent young people from using drugs. April was featured near the end of the film, when a police officer showed her a photo he first took of her about 6 months prior. The film was released in 1999, just 1 year before April's murder. In the documentary, we listened to a police officer ask April what she wanted most, and she said that she wanted to go home to Squamish and be with her son Daniel. She also said she would never want anyone to get into the life that she had fallen into, that it wasn't a life at all, and she wished she could go back in time. Tragically, she never got that chance. Sonia told us about how she inadvertently saw the original film in a school class, recognized her cousin April, and was understandably disturbed, but was encouraged by the police force's dedication to following up on April's story and including her family in that process.
They didn't tell me too much about it because I was only 16 at the time, 15, 16, and then they didn't want to, you know, share too much about the trial. But I did ask my parents about it, like, later on as an adult. And so they were able to fill me in on, like, what the guy's name was and how he was found guilty, of course. And they have to, because in Canada, they get parole every 10 years, I think. And so they attend the parole every 10 years. Whenever it comes up when he is paroled for a release, but he's still in prison as of this day. And luckily they caught him. The first one that they did, and I actually saw that in high school, it traumatized me a little bit because I didn't know she was in it. They showed her and they were calling her Shannon in it because they had like a different name for, you know, fake name for her at the time. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, no, that's my cousin. That's April. That's April. Like, what the heck? Like, why is she in here? And then after she died, they made Tears for April, which was basically a follow-up. And it followed her life down there and like videos of her talking to them and sharing pictures of Danny with the cops and that kind of thing. And they interviewed Danny for it as well. And I remember that day because they came to the house and my mom was like really worried about him. Was like, okay, you can be okay. Like, but he had a really good relationship with these cops and these filmmakers. And so they interviewed him about it. And then we actually got to watch it before it was released. And it was hard because they did show her like on the autopsy table, but blurred out. But you could tell that she was, you know, dead. But it was after they had found her in the dumpster.
Sonia explained that she believed the motive for April's murder was money, and that the person who killed her knew that she had just received a check.
2001, they had the funeral, and I remember going to the funeral, the one on the east side, and I was talking with all these people down there, like just tons and tons of people that down there that loved her, like homeless people, drug addicts, like it, you know, it didn't matter. They were coming up to me and we were talking, and they were like, we're going to find out who did this. We're going to find out who did this. Like, don't worry. Like, we loved her. We loved her. We're going to find out who did this. And he was caught, which was awesome. She had just gotten her check. And that's what I've heard anyways. I'm pretty sure it was for the money. He stole her money. I think because my guess is that she had gone and cashed it and had the money with her, something like that. Or he stole the check. I don't know. And then he murdered her and then put her in a duffel bag and dumped her in the dumpster. The police, they realized they hadn't seen her for a few days. And of course, there was that notorious case up here, Willie Picton, who basically, he was a pig farmer and he ended up murdering a lot of prostitutes and burying them on his property and feeding them to his pigs. And I don't know if at the time he was under suspicion or what, but I get like the cops said that they were wondering, oh, like, did she end up with him? Like, is that where she is? Because they hadn't seen her in a couple of days. And then they found her. Somebody was dumpster diving and ended up pulling the duffel bag out of the dumpster, luckily before the trash collector came. But she was trying to get herself clean at the time, and she didn't die from an overdose or anything. She was murdered, so.
During the time that Vancouver police were filming April, Robert Willie Picton, one of Canada's most notorious serial killers, was actively hunting women, many who were sex workers from Vancouver's east side, where April was known to frequent. In one video of April, she's recounting to the officers how she was just violently attacked by a man and narrowly escaped. The officers asked if she thought it could be the man responsible for the other missing sex workers. When April was murdered, they thought maybe she was another one of his victims. But it turned out that she wasn't a victim of Robert Picton, who was later apprehended a little over a year after April's murder. While watching the movies produced by the Odd Squad, Through the Blue Lens and their follow-up, Tears for April, we saw how much hope the officers had for April. She was so young when she became addicted to drugs, but was so full of life and had so much promise. You could feel how devastated the officers were when they learned that she was murdered. In fact, it was one officer who went to identify April in the morgue. In the follow-up film, Tears for April, Daniel himself was interviewed. Like his mother April, Daniel seemed to have such a bright future ahead of him. But something happened to Daniel in late November of 2019. And when Daniel disappeared, the Odd Squad showed up for him too and helped search for Daniel. The investigation into Daniel's disappearance seems to have slowed down, at least in terms of what police are sharing with Daniel's family. Rob continues to hold out hope that Daniel wouldn't have harmed himself, and believes his children kept him anchored even when the temptation was strong.
When it comes to his kids, his passion for his children, he never had his mom when he was, you know, after he was born. He really didn't have his mom at all, because his mom had problems. And so it was other folks taking care of him. And his father was absolutely non-existent, wasn't in the picture at all, not for a minute, when he was a little guy. So, you know, his love for his children was very, very, very organic. He didn't want his kids to go through what he had to go through without having him, you know, his mother around or a father. He wanted to be a father to his children. That was his job. And that's the way he was. He loved his kids so completely. It just doesn't add up. The conventional theory does not add up. We're not buying that so much. But then where do we go from here? What do we do? What can we do? because his remains have never been found. So that makes it, makes it even more difficult, in determining what happened. I don't think he dropped out of society and went away because his bank accounts haven't been touched. He left his phone, I believe, was left in the car. He had personal items at different people's places. The story was that he was at somebody's house and he was on the deck of somebody's house on the reservation. And he walked down the stairs, walked into a trail in the bush at nighttime. And that's the last time anyone saw him. So that is the story right now. Danny was a very, very, very accomplished guitarist. He has guitars. He has expensive guitars. They were left behind. His kids, who were his life, he hasn't contacted them at all. In fact, over the Christmas period, which was a big flag for us, he never called and he never made contact with his kids. That didn't happen. And that wouldn't be Danny. That wouldn't be him. And if he did decide to drop out of society, that he wouldn't have done that in the middle of the night wearing a checkered shirt and blue jeans and nothing else. He just wouldn't have done that. We don't believe it. So it's a tough one. There's more questions than answers, and it's just a hard thing to grapple with because we have no resolution. We are unable to mourn properly because we don't know what's happened. It's a bit of a being caught in a limbo and not knowing what to do or what to think. In the meantime, the case is still open, still a missing persons case. And, as active as, we don't know what's being done right now. I don't know if they were just waiting for more information. We just don't know. But that was essentially it. Someone just doesn't walk off your deck and disappear. And no information after that. No one looking for him. No one saying, hey, well, all this stuff is still here. How come he hasn't come back in a few days? Oh, wait now. A few weeks. Oh, wait now. A month and a half. How come?
So what happened to Daniel Ryok after he left police custody at the Squamish RCMP post? After they picked him up when he was behaving strangely in freezing temperatures on November 25th, 2019. We were able to follow his timeline throughout the day thanks to the police and Daniel's family. And even that doesn't make much sense. After leaving the police station, Daniel went to a coffee shop nearby. 45 minutes later, he was at a Walmart in Squamish. And then 20 minutes after that, he was back at the same coffee house. And then he got a ride from someone back to the area where he was living. There's about a 4-hour gap of time, and witnesses believe to have seen Daniel's car parked off of Squamish Valley Road, in a remote, heavily forested area of the region. And then, around 1 a.m. on November 26th, Daniel was spotted nearby, on a deck of a residence on that same road. Witnesses say that Daniel was not dressed for the weather, and ran off on a trail into the darkness of the night, never to be seen again. 12 hours later, Daniel's car was reported abandoned, and his cell phone was found inside the car, leaving police with no way to trace him further. Why would Daniel just disappear? Was he experiencing a mental health event? Was he afraid of someone or something? Or was there someone who wanted to harm Daniel? From what we know, there was nothing found on Daniel's phone, which remains in police custody, that points to any specific outcome in Daniel's case. But it does make us wonder if there's a big piece of the puzzle missing that could answer some of these lingering questions. At the time of his disappearance, Daniel Ryok was 29 years old. He had brown hair and brown eyes, was approximately 5'9" tall and weighed around 150 pounds. If you have any information about the disappearance of Daniel Ryok, you're asked to call the Squamish Royal Canadian Mounted Police at 604-892-6100. You can also call Crime Stoppers at 1-800-222-TIPS or 1-800-222-8477. You can follow Daniel's case on Facebook at Daniel Ryok Missing. If you are in the United States and you or someone you love is struggling with mental health or substance abuse, you can call the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, which is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, including holidays. You can reach them at 1-800-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-4357. If you're in Canada, consider reaching out to the Canadian Mental Health Association by calling 1-833-456-4566. Available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
More people need to speak. perhaps someone will be held to their conscience. That would be incredible. And I think that's what we need. Short of finding him somewhere, that's what we need. I don't know if it's, you know, people know things and they just don't want to speak because they don't want to get anyone else in trouble. If there's some suspicion out there somewhere, we don't know. It's a small, tight community. That's the hard part, because no one seems to be talking.
What my thoughts are speculation as to what really happened. It's just that. I am by no means trying to point any fingers at anybody, but because we simply don't know, and it is just speculation. It's hard to deal with. You know, and the thing is, when we're talking about it, I feel right now, there's a jumble of emotions, and sometimes it does. But it's a flood of emotions, and it's hard, and things come to your mind as you're speaking that are very difficult to deal with. We would sure like to know what happened to him. We don't feel he's still on this earthly plane. That we're very sure. We get angry, you know, sometimes. We're so frustrated because there's no movement on this case. We're not getting a lot of contributions from other people about what happened. You know, it seems like the suicide theory was there. Okay, it's done. Close the book. Suicide. Painful speculation. And everyone seems to be going on with their lives. But there's too many things that were there that just didn't add up to that. So, yeah, and that's where we're at. And there's quite a few people that feel like there's more to this than meets the eye. Why was his car towed away the next day? And again, no one is saying anything to anyone about why the car is towed away, and no one is asking where Danny is. Nobody. Until we filed the police report now, and then everybody wanted to know. We have questions to this day. At that time, in November, the river was very active. It was very fast. If there was something in the river, well, who knows? Usually things get caught up on deadheads and that sort of thing, or if things find their way to the shore, well, that's when you find them. But as far as recovery goes, I really don't know. I really don't know.
That brings us to the end of episode 352. We'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story, and also the Vancouver police, known as the Odd Squad, who did their best to rescue April from the throes of addiction, and who are continuing to help with the search for Daniel, and also the National Film Board of Canada for their films, Through the Blue Lens and Tears for April. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at The Vanished Pod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. We'll be taking next week off to spend the July 4th holiday with our families. Be sure to tune in on July 11th. We'll be back with a new case. Thanks for listening.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.